ڈھولے ڈھولے گورا جا ہری گن گا آشیا برندا بولی ناچے گورا را
آشیا برندا بولی ناچے گورا را
ڈھولے ڈھولے گورا جا ہری گن گا آشیا برندا بولی ناچے گورا را
آشیا برندا
The moon-like Lord Gouda arrives in Vrindavan while dancing. Swaying to and fro, he sings the glories of Lord Hari. Creepers adorning the trees of Vrindavan are overwhelmed with ecstatic love, and they are speaking about the glories of Lord Hari. Flocks of birds who live in the groves are singing the names of Lord Hari. Lord Hari says, Hari, Hari. Lord Gouda says, Hari, Hari. And a female parrot responds, Hari, Hari. And then all the male and female parrots start singing a loud chorus of the name of Hari.
Hari name mata hai, Hari na shiche me.
Hari name mata hai, Hari na shiche me.
Maya ma mayuri me, nachiya.
Becoming intoxicated by the holy name, the deer come forward from out of the forest. The peacocks and peahens are dancing and frolicking in ecstatic love.
Pranahori.
Lord Hari is in his heart, and Lord Hari is in his meditation, and he always chants the name of Hari with his voice. Gaura Chandra is intoxicated by ecstatic mellows, and he rolls around on the ground while singing and singing Harinam. Arriving on the bank of the Jamuna River, he dances wildly while chanting, Hari, Hari. And Mother Yamuna becomes so ecstatic that she arises and comes forward to wash Lord Gauranga's feet. Please take out the sheet of the verses that we're hearing from Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think, let Mataji, Sati Devi, just sing.
Lokera shambhate dekhi Mathura chariya Ekante akrura tirte Rahila shiya.
Seeing a great crowd assemble at Mathura, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left and went to Akrura Tirtha. He remained there in a solitary place.
Ardina aila Prabhu dekhite Vrindavan Kali arade snan paila ara prashnandana.
The next day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Vrindavan, and he took his bath in the Kaliya Lake and Prashkandana. So Mahaprabhu took his bath in the Kaliya Lake, and he saw one very special tree, and you can right now see a part of that tree. Hare Krishna. Later on, please come and have darshan and get the blessings of this Kadamba tree. Krishna has touched this very tree with his lotus feet. Would you like to be touched by the lotus feet of Krishna? After seeing the holy place called Prashkanand, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Dwadas Aditya. Dwadas Aditya is a hill, just very close to where the temple of Madan Mohan is situated. Here is one picture of Dwadas Aditya Tila as it is now, with one humble Vaishnava offering his respects there. This is the place, as we mentioned yesterday, where after Krishna jumped into the water of the Kaliya Riddha, that lake, and after him being held within the grip of the coils of that terrible snake, Kaliya, Krishna burst free, expanding his body, and danced very delicately and wonderfully upon the heads of Kaliya. And he came out of the water, and all the Brijbasis, they greeted him with such affection because they thought he had returned from death. In fact, the Brijbasis were thinking, the elderly ladies, as they were trying to keep Yasoda back from walking into the water, the poison water, to protect Krishna, they were holding her back thinking, Krishna is already gone. Now let us at least save his mother. So Krishna was cold after coming out of the water, and 12 sons, the Adityas, they warmed him on top of this hill, and his sweat that came down is that Praskandanan Sarov, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wanting to relish the sweet mellows of these pastimes, also took his bath. From there, he went to Keshi Tirtha. What happened in Keshi Tirtha? Oh, everyone knows. Everyone has gone shy. The Keshi demon was killed there. This is Keshi Tirtha right now, just by the Yamuna. Mahaprabhu was walking up and down the Yamuna, visiting these holy places. This pastime, how did Krishna kill this Keshi demon who was sent by Kamsa? Maybe someone can. He placed his left fist in the mouth of Keshi, and all of Keshi's teeth fell out because Krishna's fist became so hot. And then, from there, from Keshi Tirtha, just a little further, he went to the Rasa Stali. That is the place of the Rasa dance. All this, these pastimes of Mahaprabhu's walking in Vrindavan, they are all more or less in Sevakuns, the most holy of places, because there, in addition to these other pastimes, Krishna performed the Rasa Lila dance with the Braja Gopis. This is Vamsivat, where Krishna stood under the tree and he played his Vamsi, very deep sounding flute. We'll speak about what happened to the residents of Vrindavan when Krishna did this in a few moments. But first, or before that, we'll speak about what happened to Mahaprabhu when he went to this place. Now, I have here one more photo of okay, very good. Now, one British artist came to Vrindavan, perhaps in the mid-19th century, 1850, 1870, somewhere around then, and he painted a photo of what Madan Mohan Temple looked like then. Now, this was how long ago? Say if it was 1870. How long ago was it? 100. Well, all, yes, so many years ago. Too many years ago. So, Vrindavan, there were, notice there are no blue or green or pink plastic bags. Notice there's no mobile phone towers. No, notice that there's not thousands and thousands of people. It was even 70, 120, 150 years ago. It was such a beautiful forest, the forest of Vrindavan. The river Yamuna was running very, 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 it was wide. There was so much water. It hadn't been stolen by Delhi at that time. Very, very beautiful. And this was 150 years ago. We can just imagine how beautiful it was at the time when Mahaprabhu visited Vrindavan. Can you see? So beautiful, green and luxuriant. Even since we started coming to Vrindavan in 1974, things have changed so much. When Prabhupada spoke about the devotees going to Vrindavan when he first left the West to go there in 1967, he said, "You'll love Vrindavan when you come here. There is no whoosh, whoosh, whoosh of motor cars." My son, Jai Gurupad, was standing. He's living in Mumbai, and he was standing in front of Krishna Balaram Mandir on a Sunday, and he said, "The traffic here is much worse than Bombay." So gradually, Vrindavan is being covered by materialism and by concrete and asphalt. We are so lucky to see something of Vrindavan and Giriraj Govardhan, something of the Yamuna, because gradually they will all leave. This tree is still alive. Tomorrow we'll mention something about the Imli Tal tree that Mahaprabhu sat under. Even during our time, it has left this world. So, when Mahaprabhu saw the place, Vamsivat, the place of the Rasa Leela, what happened to him? He immediately lost consciousness. He went unconscious. He fell to the ground in ecstasy. Mataji, the next verse. When the Lord regained his senses, he began to roll on the ground. He would sometimes laugh. Sometimes he would cry. Sometimes he would dance and then fall down. He would also chant very loudly. E Range, in this way, being ecstatically amused, transcendentally excited, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu passed this way, passed that day happily,
at Kesi Tirtha. So then Mahaprabhu, in ecstasy, was rolling on the ground, dancing, falling to the ground, tears rushing from his eyes like rivers, like two rivers, crying, rolling, falling, dancing, loudly chanting. And then he rested again at Kesi Tirtha, and then he returned, as the day went on, to Akura Tirtha, where he took his bhiksha, he begged his alms and ate. So we'll begin speaking about Mahaprabhu's visit and how and why he reacted as he did at Rasastali. Om Kinatamyanandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Samilatan Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sahapanjantikam Vanja Kopatubhyascha Kripasindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Most religions or paths of spiritual life, they have their sadhanas. What does sadhana mean? Their practices. Nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakattam riddhi sadhyata kriti sadhya sa sadhanidabhi sadhanadabhi nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakattam riddhi sadhyata. But what is the sadhya of religious practices or spiritual life? That, practically speaking, no one knows. All over the world, those who have the clearest idea, practically speaking, are the impersonalists, who say the goal of your practice is nothing. You become one with everything. You lose your individuality. But this is a terrible thought. We spoke about this earlier. There is no possibility of relationship with the Supreme with this as the sadhya or the goal. Rather than losing one's false ego, one makes it so big that it includes being one with everything. The mode of the impersonalists is so terrible that anything rather than becoming a servant of God, of the Supreme, anything, even losing oneself, even committing suicide and losing one's life, is better than becoming a servant. So that's the irony. And every other religious path, what do they say is the goal? Practically speaking, you go to heaven in some form or another. But what in the world do you do there? Do you study? Do you listen to harp music all day long? What is heaven like? A credit card with no balance that you have to pay back? No electric bills? What is it like? What is the sadhya? And unless we have a clear idea about what the goal is, this material world, which we have a very clear idea about, will always attract us more than spiritual vagueness, especially the oneness or nothingness of the impersonalists. The impersonalists, they say that this material world is nothing. It's illusion. And they say our activities in this world are like a play, a drama. So play nicely, they say. Enjoy it to your the illusion to the full extent. This is the hypocrisy, or one of the hypocrisies. In Prabhupada's words, they say the world is illusion, yet they are expert at enjoying that illusion. The spiritualists either practice renouncing the material world, or they just try to enjoy it. What is the spiritual realm like? One difficulty is that it is obvious, in fact, what the spiritual world is like. We accept there is a supreme person, and we try naturally to develop our relationship with him. We have spoken about the fact, the obvious fact, that fear, asking him for things, is clearly not intimacy in relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Using our example of the king, fear of the king is not the highest relationship with the king. Going to the king to ask him for something is not the highest and most intimate relationship with the king. The most trusted lovers of the king, family members, beloved old servants who have been tested 1,000 times in life, in a life of the king's service, they are allowed into the inner chambers of the king's own palace. If you ever visit the Red Fort in Delhi, they have the Darbar of the king, his official court, and the king is sitting so high on his throne, a big platform, and everyone who comes to him has to stand very small in front of him and look up, because he is big, he has authority. We are small. No intimacy. Little love. So it is obvious, I think, to everyone, that intimacy of love measures the effectiveness of our spiritual practices. Lack of selfishness, increase of love, measures our success in spiritual life. But again, to keep the goal of spiritual life from being vague, Krishna, for this specific purpose, of course, for many purposes, but for this reason, he has come to this world to display the most attractive, intimate pastimes, activities, so intimate and so loving with his braja, village companions. The elders are his mothers and fathers. The trees and grass and rivers are his servants. The young boys are his friends, intimate friends. He also has servants. Some of his servants, such as Raktak, they carry Krishna's flutes when he goes to the forest. And Krishna has perhaps 100 different flutes. Some are gold, some are made out of jewels, some are long, some are made out of bamboo, some are short, only 6 inches. Venu, Vangsi, Murali. And he knows, this servant knows the mind of Krishna. This is what it means to be a loving servant. He knows in this circumstance there is some deer nearby, and Krishna wants to attract them with the sound of his flute. So he hands Krishna the Venu, very short, high sounding flute, and the deers hear this and they become completely attracted. Danyam sma mudagateo api harinya eta. And when he wants to call the gopis, which flute does his servant hand him? The servants are not there. You fell into my trap. He has his vangsi, which plays very low and deep melodies, which enter the heart of the gopis through their ears, calls them by their name and forcibly pulls them to Krishna. Now, the problem with Krishna performing his most intimate pastimes on earth is much better, that they so closely resemble the dealings of this world that when our minds touch these pastimes, we may think, oh, this is something I would like to do. I know about this kind of thing. I know what it is like to herd cows. I know what it is like to have a loving mother. I know what it is like to have friends, girlfriends. And Krishna must be doing something similar and acting in a similar way to me. Motivated by the same type of desires that impel me to act in these ways. Because when I want something, when I want to go with my friends, it is because I'm missing something within me. When I want to play or dance, it's because I'm lonely. I'm missing something. So therefore, the tendency is to think that when Krishna is acting, it is impelled by desires similar to mine, caused by a lack some lack within him. This is the problem. But not performing Krishna's pastimes, Krishna not performing his pastimes, a different type of a problem arises. Is that our concept of the spiritual world is either nothingness, and I've seen this 1,000 times. Oh, that's exaggeration. At least 10 or 20 times. Or maybe even 50 times. That religiosity and spirituality that doesn't ascribe clarity to what the goal is, it turns into impersonalism. It must. It always does. I've seen this. I've studied this point. Therefore, we see this even today. There is the religions of the world and the spiritual paths of the world. They are moving more and more and more. They are being swallowed by voidism, sunyavad, and monism, mayavad philosophy. Because they cannot understand with clarity. What the sadhya is actually like. Now, as soon as we say something like Krishna plays in the fields of Vrindavan and he herds cows and he likes the flute, someone is going to say, why a flute? Why not a trumpet? Why not a saxophone? Why not a violin? Why cows? Why not goats, pigs, and buffaloes? Yes. Or horses. Why isn't Krishna the horse herd boy? Because this is the way the material mind works. Why this? Why not that? This is the material, petty material mind, finite mind, trying to judge the infinite. And it is fruitless. So on one side is a difficulty that if Krishna reveals the spiritual world by performing his pastimes, then the material mind reacts against it and tries to incorporate the spiritual world within the material mental faculties. And the other side, if Krishna doesn't reveal the most intimate thing, then everyone becomes impersonalists. So Krishna has resolved this problem by revealing the spiritual world and saying that there is a way to understand it. And it is not by just measuring the spiritual world by the material mind. It is by hearing from the great teachers and putting your material mind aside for some time. Putting your material intelligence aside for some time. If Krishna, after all, is the Supreme Lord, and he wants to herd cows and play the flute and live a village life, who has the authority and the power to say no? It must be buffaloes and pigs and the trombone. This is what it means to be God, the Supreme Absolute Truth. He alone is swatantra, independent. He acts as he likes. This is what it means to have a personality. It means I like this, I don't like that. I like this more than I like that. I don't like that at all. I won't even accept it if you give it to me. This is what personality means. characteristics, a nature, an individual. So Krishna is an individual, but a supremely powerful individual. If we think that form and individuality limit his personality, limit him, if we think that him having form and attributes limit him, it is just the opposite. If we say, if you have form, you cannot have form, that is what limits him. We cannot limit him. He is unlimited. So, it is also obvious or logical that Krishna, when he plays his flute and dances with the Braja Gopis at Vangsivat, that he is not motivated by a lack within himself. It is obvious, if we accept the concept of the Supreme Absolute Truth, that is obvious. He cannot be motivated by the same things that motivate us, because everything is his. He lacks nothing. But he wishes to have loving exchanges with his different energies, and that is what's going on. Krishna cannot be attached to matter and want to squeeze some pleasure from matter as we tend to do. And that is what the reflection of the spiritual world is like. It is motivated by an emptiness within and a desire to fill that emptiness with matter by squeezing pleasure, by combining the senses and the sense objects. Indriyas, indriyasya te, raga dvesho vyavastita. But Krishna cannot be like that. Because, as Prabhupada explains in one purport, that even his devotees are not like that. His great and learned devotees have no desire to taste the mixed and miserable limited pleasures of the material world. Rather, they renounce those pleasures and meditate on his pastimes. And that is their happiness. They chant Krishna's names, practically speaking, 24 hours a day. They're engaged in Krishna's service, not seeking the pleasures of this world. And if the servants are in that mood, and if the servants are so ecstatic just from serving their master, how could the master be in need if his servants don't have these desires? There are so many examples of exalted souls, Tekwa Haridas, chanting over 180 rounds, 300,000 names of Krishna every day. That's practically 24 hours a day. Try and imitate this. I'm saying that in a sarcastic way. You cannot imitate the great devotees. I cannot. How many times have I said to myself, from now on, I'm going to just chant all the time. I'm not going to be interested in material things. From now on. But unless one is that pure and getting that taste of Krishna's service, one cannot renounce matter to that degree. So if the servants are getting so much sweetness by contacting their beloved master, how could the beloved master be be desiring petty, small-minded material pleasures. The last question I wish to address is then, why does Krishna dance in the middle of the night with the young ladies? And the answer to that question is, of course, quite inconceivable to us in our state of consciousness. But the young ladies who aren't like ladies of this world, but they are pure spiritual souls who love Krishna, who have completely given themselves to Krishna, who are so exalted, who have developed to the highest stage of love, and they don't want anything other than to please Krishna. Our concept of love of Krishna is vague because we don't have an idea of the sadhya, but in the goal. But actually, for love to blossom to the fullest degree, it has to and it will become specific. The beloved must be before our eyes, and we must want to please him specific way. So, because these, what to call them, souls, spiritual beings, entities, these gopis, these desire to serve Krishna in this way, specifically, to love Krishna as their most deepest beloved, not in a material sense at all. Again, the material world is a reflection of this. But pure love, not lust disguised as love, because they want to serve Krishna in this mood. Krishna reciprocates with them and acts as Rasaraj, as we were describing yesterday, because they want to increase Krishna's happiness. Krishna's pleasure is to increase their happiness, their ecstasy, thousands of times more than his own. And he knows just how to do it. My dear devotees, I once saw a Bible tract, and there are tens of thousands of these, that showed God as an old man with a long beard and no face sitting on a throne. A big throne with a long beard and no face. But how long was his beard? It was the length of an 80 or 90 year old man, because they wanted to give the idea that God is the oldest. And they showed him with no face because they don't know what he looks like. And also perhaps because a 90 year old man's face is generally not very appealing. The tendency is to look a bit more grotesque with every passing year. But God, if just considered to be the Creator, is neither 80 nor 90. He's thousands and millions and billions of years old. So how long should his beard be? And how wrinkled with this conception should his skin be? So obviously their conception is that God can stop aging at 80 or 90. And if you had a choice, would you prefer to stop aging at 80 or 90? or 16. Yes. Although being 16 in the material world does have its problems. Unlimited desires to enjoy and limited facilities. But Krishna has unlimited desires to enjoy, but unlimited facilities, because He is the Supreme. Perhaps we don't like that concept, but He is the Supreme Enjoyer, and we are His servants by constitution and nature. Hard to accept, but this is what it means to become a devotee, to accept this. O Lord, I am your servant. Please allow me to serve you. The devotees, when they are mature in their devotion, wish to serve Krishna in a specific rasa or way. Yesterday we spoke of the specific mood of the Prajapatis. They want to serve Him in a specific way. Now, I would like to narrate something about, in brief, about Krishna calling the gopis from Vamsibhat. And when Mahaprabhu touched that area of Vrindavan, he went unconscious. His consciousness left his body, and then when he regained consciousness, he became mad in ecstasy, dancing, crying, laughing, jumping up and down, falling to the ground, rolling in the dust of Vrindavan. How can we understand why, just by touching this, not, yes, physically with the place, but with his consciousness, because his consciousness, this is what he came to experience, to touch. The best example I have heard to describe this, that gives me a feel for what it must be like. Have any of you ridden an Indian bicycle? Yes, not in a long time. But an Indian bicycle, and then you attach to it a jet engine, and then start to move forward. There is a complete devastation of that bicycle. And that is what it is, what it, not what it is like, but an example to give us a glimpse of what Mahaprabhu contacts, what any soul who contacts Prema Bhakti, what happens to him. His body cannot contain it, practically, actually speaking. Different ecstasies erupt. Mahaprabhu demonstrated this here and in Jagannath Puri, Navadvip. We use the word ecstasy. He was feeling ecstatic. How was the prasadam? Oh, ecstatic, Prabhu. But ecstasy is something different. It is like a jet engine being attached to a bicycle. Ecstasy is the eruption of the soul's true nature when contacting his relationship with Krishna. That is our actual inheritance. And that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us. And he taught it by his example as he experienced it himself. He rolled on the ground. Tears poured from his eyes. Sometimes in Jagannath Puri, the joints of his limbs would separate by 6 inches. By 6 inches, the joints would separate. Sometimes his body would erupt in goosebumps, but huge goosebumps. Sometimes his limbs would contract within his body. What can we say about what would it take to experience? What would it take internally for that to happen externally? We cannot say. But we can say that he was experiencing just what he came, his internal reason for experience, what he wanted to experience, and that was the gopi's love for Krishna in deep separation from Krishna. So, why does Krishna call the gopis? And act in these ways with them? Because he wants to taste, ironically, the pleasure of serving. This is the greatest irony, the very greatest, that in this world, we all long to be the master. But in the spiritual world, the Supreme Master is longing to serve his beloved devotees. Aishwarya Madhurya Karunye Swarupa Purnata Atma Prajanta Bhakta Vatsalya Atma Prajanta Vidanyata. The love, although Krishna is full madhurya and karunya. What is madhurya? Sweetness. Karunya. Compassion and mercifulness. Swarupa Purnata. This is what he's made out of. But still, bhakti vatsalya. His love to serve his devotees is his most brilliant, appealing, and wonderful quality. So much atma prajanta vidanyata. It moves him towards his devotees fully. So as the devotees, and this is what braja means, they are in the mood of service, so Krishna is in the mood of service. And in that way, both enjoy to the highest extent. This is the basic framework that we wish to talk about before we dare speak about this most intimate subject of what Mahaprabhu was relishing in Vrindavan at the place of the Rasa Stali. So, I will tell the pastime in brief and then read something that perhaps will give us some hints, more hints, of the mood of the Braja Gopis, because they are completely selfless. Not that they don't have a self, but their selves are given to Krishna with the greatest of love, in their own specific mood. So, when Krishna performed the pastime of, and this one's another difficult one for the material mind to understand, cancel the word difficult, make it impossible. After Krishna stole the clothes from the gopis, he decided to reciprocate with their desire to dance with him and have intimate contact with him, wishing to increase their ecstasy. And their desire, of course, was to increase his ecstasy. So, when the moon became full, the big moon of the Sarat season, which means at the beginning of Kartik, what we will call Kartik, the moon is very big, and very big. It was the perfect night to dance with these gopis. So Krishna's internal energy inspired with him with the idea of playing his flute and calling the gopis, forcibly pulling them from their homes, causing them to drop everything, whether it was their babies, their cooking, they're feeding their babies, they're talking with their in-laws, dropping everything, pulled to this Rasastali place where Krishna was playing his flute, Vamsivat, in the middle of the night in the dangerous forest. They were so pulled that they didn't dress properly. This happens often. You read in the Bhagavatam, they don't have their earrings on right, they don't have their kajal mascara on right, they don't have their clothes properly right, they have their ankle bells improperly there. But they know one thing. We are called to Krishna. We can please him. So they arrived there, and Rasaraj Krishna knows how to boil the ecstasy and make it bubble and boil over. So what does he do? He says, "Thank you for coming. The forest is so beautiful on this moonlit night. Now you can go home." Why have you come? And then he starts, of all things, after forcibly pulling them there with the sound of his vangsi, another vangsi sound. It's so deep and emotion, it pulls the emotion from the heart. And the emotion that pulled from their heart was the highest love for Krishna, pure spiritual love for Krishna to serve him. And they were aflame with this desire to serve Krishna. And he starts to preach to them. You should go home now that you've seen the beauty of the Vrindavan forest on this moonlit night. You should know that it's not safe for you to be here because there are so many dangerous animals. And you should know that the highest duty for a woman is to serve her family, her husband, her children. So go home, go home. And you should also know that if you want to get close to me, you should chant my holy name. You should worship my deity. Go home and do these things. Krishna told the same thing to the wives of the Brahmins, the Dvijapatnis, and they went home. But the gopis wouldn't go. They just looked at the ground upon hearing these words of Krishna. He was boiling their ecstasy. He was filling them with anticipation. He was increasing their love. and therefore their ecstasy. They began with their toes to draw marks on the ground because they were such gentle young girls. They began to, tears came from their eye. Krishna, after calling us, sending us home, and preaching to us. The purpose of preaching is to develop love for Krishna. He's sending us home. And they boldly began to speak to him. Krishna, don't talk to us like this. The reason why we've come is because our acharyas say, you have stolen our minds with your flute playing. And now we've come to retrieve our lost property. How could we go home now? We are just completely attracted by you. Don't be so cruel. Don't send us home. We love only you. Yes, it's true that a woman's prime duty and highest principle is to serve her husband, but you are ultimately the husband of everyone. Because you, everyone is coming from you, everyone is depending on you. And after countering Krishna's arguments and his naughty words, Krishna decided to fulfill their desire and dance with them. So he began to dance with them in a wonderful way. And the Bhagavatam describes how these gopis, they were possessed of some pride. We are the most fortunate, so Bhagyavan. We are the most fortunate of any person within existence because we are dancing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who could be more fortunate than us? Actually, there was no pride. This was all a product of their love for Krishna. And there are many levels to look at what happened next. But the simplest level is that Krishna decided to curb their pride. And what did he do? After calling them out, saying, go home, then saying, okay, let us exchange love, and let us dance. And then, after all that, they felt some pride, and he disappeared. He disappeared completely. What could have happened to the love of the Braja Gopis? Who can imagine what they felt? But the Bhagavatam explains how they reacted to Krishna disappearing from their midst. They went completely mad. They didn't say, I've had enough of him, or found somebody else. They didn't take up a different religion. This one's too hard. They didn't do anything except went completely mad. And they madly began searching for him because all they wanted was Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. This is the mood of the Braja Gopis. They have nothing but Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. This is the mood of all the residents of Vrindavan. They care about nothing but Krishna, Krishna. They want him and nothing else. Want him means want to serve him. with the greatest love, no fear, no force, no external motivation at all. It's all spontaneous love on the highest, most exalted platform. They love Him because they love Him. They love Him to such a degree they don't know or care that He's the all-powerful Supreme Lord. We have to keep mentioning that so we don't forget. They even know that, but they don't care. They don't care. Their love is for Him is so dominant. Not the slightest tinge of lust. Not the slightest tinge of selfishness. Not the slightest tinge of anything of the material world. How can we, in darkness, imagine what is light? But we can perhaps get some idea. Hint. So they went madly rushing from one forest of Vrindavan to the other. They went so mad. They were calling for Krishna. They began to talk to the trees and the creepers. Oh, mango tree, oh, nipa tree. Have you seen the son of Nanda Maharaj going nearby? No answer. Of course, they were trees. They went madder and madder. Until they were so mad that Krishna, His potency, entered into them. And we should know that in their madness, in longing for Krishna, they're experiencing Krishna completely. They're experiencing Krishna and missing Krishna. They're not with Krishna and they miss Him. We're not with Krishna and we feel nothing. So they started imitating Krishna's pastimes. One became Putana. Garbha. One imitated Krishna, one imitated Putana, one imitated Trinavarta, one imitated Krishna, one imitated Coward Boys and Krishna and this and that and Krishna, and they went madder and madder and madder and madder. And then they walked to the bank of the Yamuna, because Vamsibhat is very close to the Yamuna. And then their hearts, in this feeling, complete feeling of separation, opened up completely. And what was in their hearts came out their mouths. And those songs that came out of their mouth were called the Gopi Gita, the songs of the deepest separation. And in very few, perhaps 19 slokas, where the pastimes of Krishna and the activities of Krishna and their feelings about them were manifested, how they were seeing their eyelids blinking as their greatest enemy because of how it separated them from seeing Krishna for Nimesha, just a split moment. Who can imagine the love of the Braja Gopis and their madness? But we don't have to imagine it because that love in their heart came out their mouths. And then finally, in the last verse, Yate Sijata Charanam Bruham Staneshu Pitas Shanai Sriya something Kakeshu Tinatatum Matasitat Vyatitena Kimsvit Kupari Bir Brahmitidya Bhavamayushamna. The last verse, they said, Krishna, please come to us. And they said in one verse, was really in their consciousness is that you've left us and you're wandering around in Vrindavan in the dark, and there are thorns and rocks, pebbles and ankur, sprouts and pebbles, this and that, on the ground in Vrindavan. And your feet are so tender, your body is so tender, that if a leaf falls on your body, it turns reddish from the touch of a falling leaf. And those tender feet wandering now in the dark in Vrindavan, and you may be experiencing pain, discomfort or pain, this is intolerable for us. Please come and let us take those feet and hold them to our hearts, fearing that our own bodies may be too hard to give relief to your soft, tender feet. The only thing in the midst of the agony of separation, in the midst of Krishna calling them, sending them away, then dancing with them, then running from them, in the midst of all that, Krishna playing with them like dolls, practically speaking, pushing them, pulling them, pushing them, pulling them, all that was in their heart was caring for him. So therefore, the great devotees meditate constantly on these prayers, not seeing in them any material emotion. And seeing them as the expression of topmost love for Krishna. So then, after the gopis express their minds, their hearts, through their mouths, then, by the Yamuna, Krishna came again. And the gopis and Krishna played many things. They engaged in many pastimes before the actual rasa dance. But some of the gopis wanted to chastise Krishna, and they sat him down and they said, Krishna, we see that there are three different kinds of people in this world. Some people, you give them love, they give you love. You don't give them love, they don't give you love. They just reciprocate with how people treat them. You're nice to me, I'll be nice to you. You're not nice to me, I won't be nice to you. It's one kind of person. Even this, like, anger that they had, it's just a different type of ecstasy. Because the center is, the sthaibhav is so solid, it just generates different flavors in the rasa, in the loving, ecstatic experience. Second kind of person, Krishna, are those who you give them or you don't give them, they give to you. Their giving is not dependent on how you treat them. And the third type, no matter how you treat them, they are completely indifferent. They don't react. You treat them with affection, they don't react. You treat them with anger, they don't react. So, dear Krishna, which type of these three are you? They wanted to trap him into admitting that he was indifferent. They wanted him to admit his own faults, that he wasn't reciprocating with their love. Because the first type, if you love him, he reciprocates with love. The second type, he loves even if you don't love him. But the third type, they don't love no matter what you do. And the gopis had so much love for Krishna, as we've been saying. So they were trying to get him to fall into their trap, which is not easy to do with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna replied, "My dear gopis, the first type, if you love them, the one who reciprocates with how he's treated, this is just business. This isn't true love. Second type, those who are indifferent, that's divided into different categories. Oh no, then he said, those who love despite how they're treated, that's the best kind. The third type is divided into many categories. Perhaps there are six categories. And then one by one, there are the people who don't reciprocate because they're spiritually situated, and there are people who are up to come. They're materially fulfilled, so they don't reciprocate. They don't need anything. And there are those who don't have any problem causing pain to others. Even those who are spiritually superior. And then Krishna said, "My dear gopis, I've named so many categories, but I am not in any of them." I would like to read some of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Krishna started explaining why he wasn't reciprocating with them the way he wanted. He said, "The reason I do not immediately reciprocate with the affection of living beings, even when they worship me, O gopis, is that I want to intensify their loving devotion. They then become like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it, and who thus becomes so anxious about it that he can think about nothing else." So how is this different from the worst kind of indifference? That's what the gopis ask. This is complete indifference. You're saying you're just trying to increase our love, but actually you're indifferent to our love. So then Krishna explains, and Satchinanda Maharaj read this earlier, two different kinds of lovers of Krishna. "For those surrendered souls who worship me through Nam Sankirtan and other means, I do not respond in order to make their worship more perfect. O gopis who cannot understand my real intention, not seeing me, those surrendered souls develop deep humility, feeling, 'Alas, alas, everything I have done up until now has been useless. Because I am an offender, Krishna has not shown me even the slightest favor. Let me be damned.'" The materialistic mind, when we don't get what we want materially and spiritually, condemns everyone else, but not oneself, in fact. So that's one level. That Krishna and Srila Jiva Goswami explains this nectar devotion bhakti samrita sindhu. Why bhava bhakti is so rare is because it is so powerful that it conquers Krishna. And Krishna just doesn't give it out to those unless those souls really and only want this. And by constantly thinking, oh, I'm so unfortunate, Krishna's not giving me love. He's giving me this and that, but he's not giving me love for him. And I don't want this and that. I only want love for him. That type of fixedness is boiled by Krishna. Until one is surrendered, meaning casting his fate with Krishna fully, there's always a wavering back and forth. Should I go this way? Should I go that way? Should I do that? Should I do that? But at this stage, fully surrendered, having given oneself to Krishna, one may think, well, then Krishna should immediately give me just what I want in spiritual life. After all, it's spiritual life I want. But Krishna doesn't do that. He wants to award himself, and he knows the process of doing that, and that is the fire must boil. The love, it must boil, it must boil. And separation is the way to make it boil. There is no separation unless there is love. Again. But when there is the blossoming of love, separation makes the love boil. One sadhu once told me that you people, you want to love Krishna in the mood in Vrindavan, but you don't even know what love is. And then he said, I once saw an 80-year-old mother of a 60-year-old man picking up a spoon and feeding him with his hands, with her hands. He wasn't glorifying overly mothering in that sense. And then he said, you don't know what love is. Love dictates one's consciousness. Controls one's consciousness. And by constantly saying, oh Krishna, by thinking, on one hand, by thinking, I'm so unqualified, and on the other hand, thinking, oh Krishna, please be merciful to me. I need your mercy. I don't want anything other than you. This is the process that evokes Krishna's mercy. Because it makes the mood of love grow. As long it boils it. As long as we, not getting what we want, turn other places, blame others, etc., 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 etc. Until we only care about Krishna and feel unqualified and only care about Krishna, but yet feel completely unqualified, but yet not being able to resolve the fact that one only wants to serve Krishna. And then crying to Krishna for mercy. Which is the thing that evokes his mercy. When the flame of that love boils so much. So Krishna is telling this process in brief. So by constantly thinking in this way, not now and then, constantly, those who have not yet developed mature pure love, because they already have love but not yet mature, will become free from lust and anger and awaken pure devotion full of power and brilliance. And then he describes, those who have pure love, mature love, I still don't come to them because I want them to deepen their attachment to me. Complete attachment, because this is the most inner chambers of the heart of Krishna, of God. That's the absolute truth. It's not cheap. The cost is everything plus more. And then Krishna says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, although you gopis are the ideal example of those who worship even those who do not worship them, I too am actually merciful. Because I have given you my darshan, I'm standing right in front of you. The gopis don't like Krishna's answer. He said, two categories, those who have prem for you and those who have prem but not yet mature prem. But the gopis are not in either of those categories, and they know it. They're in a class by themselves. They're the topmost. It's not that they have to deepen their attachment to Krishna. They have nothing but Krishna. So the gopis, are upset that Krishna is putting them as ordinary devotees in those categories. And then he responds with text 21, and this is the final verse in this 31st chapter. My dear girls, he says, understanding that simply for my sake, or the not final, the next to final, that simply for my sake you have rejected the authority of worldly opinion, of the Vedas, of your relatives, I acted as I did only to increase your attachment for me. And even when I removed myself from your sight by suddenly disappearing, I never stopped loving you. Therefore, my beloved gopis, do not harbor any bad feelings towards me, who am your beloved. He starts to plead with them, thinking that he had a purpose to fulfill, which he'll describe. But he made them suffer because of this, his own purpose. So he's starting to apologize to them now. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, devotees, Krishna's words and mood, devotees such as you have never existed either in the past, the present, or the future. There are no other devotees like you, whose attraction for me is so great that it never decreases by one atom. No matter what Krishna does to the gopis, their love does not withdraw in the slightest bit. It's already aflame continuously in their differing moods, and Krishna takes advantage of that, seemingly. Tells them to go home, does this to them, plays with them in that way. And they're only concerned about him. Your love doesn't decrease by one atom. Please, therefore, forgive this injustice of mine, which I did just to show the other premi bhaktas the great glory of your love and separation. I want it because love is something that is kept in the deepest corner of the heart. So how would we understand the love of the brother gopis, unless Krishna made some way to get what was in the cave of their heart out coming from their mouth so we could hear it. So Krishna wanted to have them glorified. That's what he's explaining. Because otherwise no one would know about the supreme love of the gopis. But to do that, in a sense, he tortured them. In a sense, of course, different varieties of ecstasy. So he's apologizing. Please forgive me for my lack of consideration for you. Please forgive me. You should not be inimical or find fault with me because I'm so dear to you. Certainly lovers do not take to heart the fault of their beloveds. And then, and then Krishna says, the Napariya Hum verse, that in fact, your love has conquered me. The depth of your love has conquered me to the degree that I have no way of repaying you. Because you've given up all your relatives and friends and everything for me, and I still maintain my relationship with my parents, my friends, the cows, the this and the that. I am Bahunishta, so many devotees who love me, but your love is focused, Ekanishta, focused on me alone. I can't repay you. They conquer God. They conquer Krishna with their love. This is Braja Bhakti. It conquers Krishna. And then, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains Krishna's mood further, where Krishna says, your love is so exalted, it has defeated me. It defeats God, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme. And I'm forever indebted to you. So all I can say is your own love in and itself is the greatest thing. I can't give you anything to complement or add to it. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti explains, very short, more of Krishna's mood and mind. Although your good character makes you forgive me, forgiving my faults and relieve me of my debt, because you don't think in the way I'm saying, still I remain forever indebted to you. Then the gopis considered in their minds, even though Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is full of all transcendental qualities and devoid of even the slightest trace of faults, and even though he knows the depths of our love for him, in order to broadcast, to let the world know, to establish the superiority of our love for him, and also to make him feel indebted to us, he has performed this act of giving us up. But we, who wanted to trap Krishna and make him admit his fault, even though he's clearly faultless, he just wanted to glorify us. But we wanted to trap him, embarrass him, and defeat him, and criticize him for his conduct with our riddles. That was our intent, so immoral. But his desire only was to glorify us and establish our exalted position. We could never be as pure in love as he is. Thus, we have been captured by Krishna's love. So this is Vrindavan. This incredible, eternal, unending competition between Krishna and the Brijvasis But who can serve and please the other more without the slightest tinge of lust or selfishness? And Krishna is the most expert at that. But the Brijbasis are even more expert. But Krishna is the most expert. And therefore, the bliss of Braja is forever increasing in this eternal competition of loving service. Now, I wanted to read. I wanted to try to read. Where is it? Didn't you bring something? Some of Prabhupada's words on how to develop this love. I compiled some things for a few years ago on Radhastami in Vrindavan. So it's very much centered on Srimati Radharani. And this is what Mahaprabhu was wanted to taste. And this is why he's so merciful. Because he's tasting the mood of Srimati Radharani's love for Krishna that is so exalted and completely unparalleled. From a lecture in Vrindavan, Srimati Radharani, and also listen and see if you get any hints as how you, each and any one of us can advance a little. Srimati Radharani is the symbol of eternal internal energy. Therefore, we take shelter of Srimati Radharani in Vrindavan, and that is our perfection of life. Then it will be easier to associate with Krishna very easily. That should be our motto. Calcutta, 1974. So today is Srimati Radharani's birthday, Radhashtami. So we called you for meeting. This Radharani is the source of spiritual inspiration. So our request is everyone who is present here today, Radhashtami, to pray to Radharani. And she is Hari. Hara. This is Hari. This word is Radharani. Hara. Radharani, Radha, or Hare, the same thing. So Hare Krishna. So this repetition of addressing Radha and Krishna, or Hare Krishna, is to pray. My dear Lord and the energy, the spiritual energy of the Lord, kindly engage me in your service. That's all. I am now embarrassed with this material service. Please engage me in your service. This is good sense. We are servants here. We are engaged in so many services. But it is not giving us comfort. Krishna is Param Brahman. He cannot enjoy anything material. He has to create the source of enjoyment by his own spiritual potency. That is Radharani. So Radharani is described in Shastra. Radha Krishna Pranaya Vakriti Ladini Shakti Asmad. That is Krishna's Ladini Shakti. She gives pleasure to Krishna. So she is very kind. And today is Radhastami. If we pray to Srimati Radharani, therefore in Vrindavan you see, they are first of all glorifying Jai Radhe. Everywhere you hear Jai Radhe. To glorify Srimati Radharani. So if Radharani is pleased, he'll be able to approach Krishna very easily. And that is the goal of life. That is the goal of life. Vita raga bhaya krodha Man maya marupasvita. Mamupasvita means you have to take it. You cannot take shelter of Krishna directly. You have to take shelter of his potency. You come to the temple. Take the impression of this Radha and Krishna and always think of him. That is the highest, topmost yoga system. This is in Mumbai, 1974. Therefore, the deity worship is very important. If you're engaged in deity worship, you always get the impression of Krishna and Radharani. And if you think of Krishna and Radharani always in your heart, then you become the topmost yogi. Mirapitomana buddhi yomad bhakta. In this way, one who executes devotional service, samepriya, he is very dear to me. So if you want to be dear, if you want to be seen by Krishna, if you want to be seen by God, follow this instruction and your life will be successful. Thank you very much. Vrindavan, 1974. This Vrindavan Dham, simply they are searching after. They never say they have found. Hey Rad, hey Brajadevike, Chalalite. Hey Nanda Sunokuta, oh where is Radharani? Where are you? Where are your friends, Lalita and Vishaka? Where is Nanda, son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna? Sri Govardhana Kaupa Parapatale Kalindi Vane Kuta. Where are you? Are you near Govardhan Hill or in the forest on the bank of the Jamuna? Gosantaviti Sarvato Karar Mahavivalo. They are crying. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Radharani? Where is... They're crying, Gosantaviti Sarvato Brajapure. They are mad. Mad after. Vande Rupa Sanatano Raguya Gosi Jiva Goswam Gopalako. This is the process of Krishna Bhajan. Not that I've just seen last night Krishna dancing with the gopis. It's not that easy. Anyway, there's more, but time's over. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any question? Simple question? But you don't understand the love of the Brijbasis. That's naturally why, because our concept of God doesn't include Vrindavan and the love of the Brijbasis. So of course we can't understand it. But it's so powerful and so all-conquering that Krishna himself wants to taste it, and therefore he comes as Mahaprabhu. Yes, we can't understand it, but we should get some glimpse that there's something far more wonderful than our understanding. Far more wonderful than religion and spiritual life that has nothing to do with Vrindavan. This is the highest, and it's not easy. The cost is the cost that's described here. So we should know what that thing in our heart is. And therefore Krishna doesn't say that to us. And I do mean us. They're Braja Gopis. What kind of purification do they need? Right. So they're already there. This is the play of the Leela. And Krishna is rasarajan and churning it. That's his expertise. And he's, even to the end, he's turning it. He comes back. And they tried to trap him. And his answers turn it further and make them, and they were angry at him. But it's not anger, and their whatever pride is there, it's not pride. Just churning forever. It's not static, it's variegated continuously. And it's ever increasing. So we can't conceive of that either. And just to conceive of Krishna with his all potency is ever increasing in potency. We can't deal with these concepts in the material mind, in fact. And we will never be able to understand it. Because only Krishna understands himself, and he doesn't even understand himself. Well, how is he? He's God. He has to be able to understand himself. Otherwise, he's lacking the ability to understand himself, and on and on and on and on. But how he feels, how can we understand? Because we're... And he's... We simply don't have either the hardware or the software. So we should take whatever little understanding we've been given and make that our offerings with that and pray that Krishna increases our affection. Anirudha Prabhu. Yeah, he was praising them. Teasing. Did you say teasing or praising? But we see how we can only judge what he was doing by how they reacted to what he said. He was praising them, and they're maybe wondering, is he just teasing us? Is he just flattering us to get out of it again so we don't become angry at him? But you can see how these gopis reacted in the words of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. No, he's admitting defeat before the love of the Braja Gopis. Because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains it in that way. So we accept his explanation. Because he's a resident of that place. I think I should stop. No, wrong thing. But here is the Kaliya. Wonderful wood.
Let's express our gratitude to Braja Gopi.
By saying, Bolo Giriraj. See, I can't say Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki jai.
Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki jai. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj ki jai.
No. That was insufficient Bolo Giriraj Maharaj. Could we just do that one more time? Please.
Bolo Giriraj Maharaj.
And just so that Sachinanda Maharaj can hear us say, Jai Jai Sri Radhe Sham.
Jai Jai Sri.
Now we can ask him if he heard.